Frank.
What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hi there. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've joined us. Come on in as we talk all things Disney, all things Mouse and Castle. It's like Disney and the Disney parks. Although it's mostly Disney parks today, isn't that right, Mr. Aaron Goins?
That is correct, because you... once again, gallivanted off to Disney without me.
Yes. Well,
I didn't even know this was happening. Like, I saw through social media.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't say, hey, I'm going to Disney this weekend. No. It was like, I saw an Instagram post.
It was kind of a last minute thing. But yes, I once again traveled off to Disney and you found out on social media.
Yeah.
But you didn't find out on social media that I got engaged. That was really the big thing of the weekend. If there's a lead story in Riley's life.
This is true. Congratulations, sir.
I appreciate it. Well, the Disney part's related, which is why I'm bringing it up on the podcast. Because Disney was the excuse for which I was surprising my then girlfriend, now fiance. I guess I shouldn't keep people in suspense. She said yes.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Savannah.
I was just assuming.
Yeah. So people are like, wait, what? No. But it was the Disney, trip to Disney was the excuse, was the, it's like, well, hey, we do the military tickets, but they're like 5-day passes. It's a little weekend trip. I've been talking about it since the summer. However, since the summer, I've also been talking to her family and like her mom and sisters and we're planning this whole elaborate, not too elaborate, like not crazy, there's a YouTube video that's gone viral crazy proposal, but like still a somewhat elaborate surprise plan somewhere in the middle. And so instead of going to Disney, I proposed. But here's the funny thing. Instead, it was going to be that Saturday, but instead, of course, that Saturday, there was a proposal in the morning and that wonderful engagement party. So, however, the Disney part comes in where... I talked to her literally in the drive from Tybee Island, Georgia, where the beautiful proposal took place at sunrise. On the drive to her family and the party, she's like, well, we're still going to Disney, right? And I was like, well,
like it wasn't all just a cover.
And I was like, well, we can.
wait. Were you actually not going
so
to go to Disney?
In the spirit of sacrifice, I thought there might be like a family event or we'd stick around and like visit the fam, hang out a little bit the next day after the party or something. And we kind of did. Like we slept in and had lunch with everybody afterwards because like the big engagement party was very crowded. It was a whole shindig. And so... we were pretty tired, and so I figured, well, maybe we'll just cancel it. Like, that was generally what I thought would happen, but I think because she knows me, and knew I became very excited when the possibility of still doing like a half day, which is what we ended up doing, at the parks. So here I am back on Mouse and Castle to recount another impromptu Disney trip.
But you got to do some things that you hadn't gotten to do yet before.
So there's some reviews
coming up.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about primarily on the episode. We're going to dig into the world of Avatar, which I got to experience properly. So we got the world of Avatar. Let's see. Then, of course, Galaxy's Edge, East Coast Edition, and some comparisons and contrast there. And... a Toy Story Land. So I got to hang out at all three over the course of the afternoon and still managed to do dinner with the family in between all of that. I don't know how we did it. We were exhausted, though, at the end of the day. I'm not going to lie. It was a big day. But I kind of wanted, because these are all examples, Avatar kind of was the response to the Harry Potter stuff at Universal, which was the first, like, let's really take up the level of immersion a notch. And it's kind of the template for which you, Galaxy's Edge was based on, just in terms of the really in-depth immersive design experience. So, and even like, and I was talking to Savannah, as she's been to Galaxy's Edge, but she hasn't been to Animal Kingdom or World of Avatar, certainly, since she was a little kid. So you can kind of see, as she's noticing the similarities, really, in some of the design experience as you kind of walk and journey along a pathway into the land, and there's kind of a transition that takes place. And so that's, it's kind of interesting for my fiance, I almost said girlfriend, for her, it was kind of interesting because she's comparing that to what she's seen at Galaxy's Edge, which is kind of an interesting experience. So there were a couple different things about this trip. One was checking out those three somewhat new, I guess Avatar isn't super new anymore, but some of the newer offerings that Disney has experienced that have revived a lot of these parks. That now, of course, Avatar, the World of Avatar, is single-handedly responsible for drastically boosting the attendance of Animal Kingdom over the last 2 years. It's really turned that park around.
Oh, definitely. Animal Kingdom has always been a personal favorite of mine, even before Avatar came around. But I know, in general, it tends to be kind of the least favorite of the Disney parks.
Kind of the stepchild. Yeah, until this. And they really, like, the finances and attendance show. And with that template working, that really seems to be the go-to format for Disney moving forward, whether it's Toy Story Land, which they just completed. And Aaron, I know you went a couple months ago, and we heard your review here on the podcast. And of course, Galaxy's Edge being the most notable, most ambitious, you know, revamp project that we've had so far. So it's interesting to just to see the economics of how it's transformed. And so as you go into Avatar, that was the first thing that I was kind of taking note of. It was really like a 1-2-3 comparison of all of these experiences. And when you go into Avatar, how immersive it feels, and then you go to Galaxy's Edge, and they're saying bright suns. Oh, and we had a bunch of Galactic Citizens congratulating us in universe on our engagement.
Oh yeah, how'd they do that?
Well, so of course Disney gives you the wonderful little buttons.
You have the little pin.
We had the little happily ever after pin, yeah. Which, by the way, they changed it a couple years ago. My good buddy Scott Rifen informed me they used to have like wedding, engagement, anniversary ones. But I think it just became too complicated, so they just now have a generic happily ever after. And it's like two Mickey charms linked together. And it's like, oh, that's cute. So, but here's the problem with that. Everybody, all the Galactic Citizens kept wishing us happy anniversary.
Oh, they didn't guess correctly.
Which it is basically our anniversary. We started dating about a year ago. But it's kind of funny to me that that became a thing. So, I'll leave that as a tease. I'll come back to that for when we talk about Galaxy's Edge. But so Avatar, the World of Avatar, here's the second thing we attacked with this trip. That was also a first. I made a snack attack list. That's what I'm calling it. I combed through the Disney food blog, which is my favorite Disney blog, I have to say. I love, like, their Instagram too is amazing, but I combed through it and looked up like Animal Kingdom snacks and jotted down like about a dozen of all the ones that looked good, and then prioritized ones to limit my purchases, not based on budget, but just on the amount we could freaking eat. And it's killing me that I wish, hang on. I promise I'm not doing this for dramatic effect, but I think I see. Oh, yep, here it is. I saved it. Yes! The snack list that I made, I narrowed it down to our top four things. And two of them were at the World of Avatar, although we only ended up getting one. So we go straight through Avatar. The wait's obscene still. The wait's longer than the Millennium Falcon. which is already kind of ridiculous. It was up to 2 hours that morning when I was checking in. But as there were no fast passes day of, because of course it was kind of a last minute plan. But I looked up, I forget the website, but that has like the estimated crowds and wait times throughout the day, and it predicts it. There's a website. Aaron, you've got an app that I think does it for that day.
It's like Disney Touring Plans or something
like that. That's the one. Yep, that's the one. Or touringplans.com or something like that.
Yeah.
But I looked up that day and I saw, oh, it actually will go down to about an hour. And sure enough, like right on schedule, right about 1 p.m., it dropped to about an hour. And so that was the time, and we jumped in line for Flight of Passage, which is the ride I have wanted to do for years. The last like 2 years, 2 or 3 years, I've been to Animal Kingdom at least 2 different times where I wanted to do it, but I've just never been willing to. I'm just not that guy. I may be the most interested in a ride. I can't do 2 hours.
You can't wait 2 hours.
I think
close to 3 hours for that ride one time.
Jeez.
Yeah. We went right as the park was closing and kind of jumped in line, and we're just so we didn't waste time waiting in line where we could be doing other things.
Oh, gotcha.
And then like right before the park closed, we hopped in line, which they let you do.
Yeah.
And so then we stayed an extra. It was, I think it got close to 3 hours. But the queue is pretty cool. So, and we kind of knew we were going to be in for that. So we brought snacks and we kind of were playing games and we kind of planned ahead.
Nice. Nice. Well, and here's the thing that, made it better is the snacks. Cause that's what we, using my handy dandy snack attack list, that was the first place we bulleted towards, which, I actually pulled up. Here we go. We went to the Pongu Pongu, and there's a bunch of drinks. I'm trying, but they don't have the.
Where's Pongu Pongu located in the park?
It's right towards the back. It's right across from the Satuli Canteen.
Okay, so it's in service. World of Avatar.
Yeah, so in World of Avatar, right in the far corner, right at near the exit if you were to go up to Africa. And so they have this incredible drink at Pongu Pongu. It's this tiny little kind of snack stand. And I've never really done like the Disney snack thing beyond when we did... my poor brain. Wine and Dine.
Flower and Garden?
Yeah, Wine and Dine.
Wine and Dine, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So this is my first time kind of checking out some of these little snack and drink stands that I had never been to before. So we went to Pongu Pongu and ordered a really delicious rum drink that had these little the globes. I can't think of it. It's like boba tea balls, but they're not. It was delicious, and we got that drink, and it's killing me that I it wasn't on my list, but it just looked so good, we grabbed it. And then we grabbed the small little cheesecake Danish and ate that and had the drink while we were in line. And we were only in line maybe 45 minutes, calculated it, and then rode Flight of Passage.
That's great. That's a great first experience
for right?
Flight of Passage. Yeah, mm-hmm. 45-minute wait, you got snacks.
Mm-hmm. It was it was really the perfect amount of time to appreciate all the cool things that they have in line, which very much remind me of the experience of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train or now, of course, the Millennium Falcon ride, basically the ability to entertain you as you go through. Again, consistent with that. And then I enjoy the Avatar movie. I'm not like the biggest fan in the world, but like even Savannah saw it when it came out, but you know, it's been 10 years ago now, but she like generally remembered it. And here was Savannah's observation. Avatar, and the reason this ride probably works so well, is it's kind of a blank slate. Because, and I never thought about it this way, because I often hear like, really Avatar? Like, yeah, it made a bunch of money, but is it a cultural icon like Star Wars? Is it really entered the pop culture language in the way that a lot of the other IP of Disney has? And the answer is no. But that might be a good thing. Because, like, when you take your family to Galaxy's Edge, and you go to the cantina, you don't know what Galaxy's Edge is. You just saw Star Wars. You like Star Wars when you're a kid. And the cantina isn't the cantina. is there a brief part of you that isn't going to be a little disappointed? Is by the fact that people aren't as familiar with Avatar, does it make that ride more impressive than, say, Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run? Because we've seen the Millennium Falcon do it, and we know it so intimately well. Your take, Aaron.
No, I think that's a really good observation by Savannah. That
she's pretty smart.
The expectation, because Star Wars is such a big part of pop culture, and the people that are going there, at least, you know, at the beginning, the people that were like diehard fans that just had to go see it, they had really high expectations for it. And
yes,
there's already something in mind to them, like, what is Star Wars to them, and is this feel like Star Wars? Whereas, like you said, you're not a big, like, you liked the movie okay, Avatar, but you're not a huge fan. I'm in the same boat. Like, in fact, I actually didn't really like the movie that much at all when I first saw it. I was just kind of like, eh, this feels like a ripoff of, you know, Pocahontas. It just didn't feel like a very original story. I just didn't like the movie that much. And then when I heard that Disney was adding a whole section of one of their parks, one of my favorite parks, Animal Kingdom, they're going to have a whole Pandora section. I was like, oh, what a waste. Like, I was kind of like annoyed by it. And I went into there with no expectations, like super low expectations, if anything. And then just completely got blown away by, you know, just the design of it, the floating rocks, the waterfall, the way it looks at night, which I don't think you got to see.
No.
Absolutely amazing. Like, that's just a whole different experience in and of itself. And then the ride, you know, Flight of Passage is just the best ride in any Disney park. And I think most people would agree with that. So
Because you texted that to me, and it's best. Is it like by far and away, like, there's not even a close second for you?
Yeah, there's nothing else that touches it because of the type of experience it is.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big simulator ride fan, but I think this, it's kind of like, you know, and most people that are listening to this podcast have probably ridden it, so they know this. But for anyone who hasn't, it's kind of like Soarin', if you've ridden Soarin' at Epcot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Except taken to a thrill level. So they took the same idea, you know, with the big screen that's kind of goes around you almost. You know, it's so big that you're immersed within the screen, but then you're also on, you're on something that's kind of moving you, and the way that it's just, there's no other ride that you can even compare it to, because there's no other ride in Disney that's anything like it.
That's true.
Yeah, for me, I don't think anything even touches it. Which is saying a lot, because there's a lot of rides at Disney that I really like, but this is one that, and that's maybe part of the problem. Like, when I went to do Smuggler's Run, it was like, I already kind of had in my mind, oh, is this going to be the next amazing ride? And then it didn't even come close to Flight of Passage.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Cause I loved Flight of Passage, and it makes it my top three, I'd say. It'd be up there, maybe a tie. It's hard for me to say it's a clear favorite in the same way as you, but
if you're saying it's your top three, what's one that's better?
Here's the thing. I think it's the best designed ride. I don't know if it's my favorite experience, because the whole walking through the Millennium Falcon, just as the kind of Star Wars fan I am, by walking through the Millennium Falcon and experiencing what it's like to pilot it, even with the kind of rudimentary controls and the excitement of doing that with friends, like, that experience for me was better. But is it a better designed ride? I can't say it is. I think I have to agree with you, at least in terms of the way the ride's designed. And for, you know, if you want to take your kids on a thrill ride, I think Flight of Passage has to take the cake. The only reason the others are like close to personal favorites of mine are just because of how much I love the IP, right?
Right.
I can't really add to it. The experience of it, I'm sure anyone, if you guys have listened to the podcast, I'm probably the last person to ride this. I'm sure all of you guys have, but it is interesting how they really tried to take that immersiveness part and have it feel like you're riding an actual banshee / dragon, basically. But to the point, though, where they went a little over the top, like, I don't know how to say.
What part was over the top?
I don't know how to say this. It vibrates a lot. There's a lot of stuff. It's kind of a weird sensation. We'll just put it that way.
It breathes. Like, you know, there when you have your leg, because you're almost like in, it's almost like a motorcycle, the way I would describe it.
Yeah.
The way you kind of straddle this thing. And, you know, so you have your legs on either side of it, but then on the inside, there's, they actually have some function where it feels like you're actually on a living creature, because you can feel the breath, like you can feel the lungs pushing out kind of on your legs. So, yeah, I never felt that, like the times that I've ridden it, I've probably only ever ridden it maybe 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I never felt that, like, oh, this is weird, or that's kind of like a, you know, maybe you were on one that was like malfunctioning.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people don't even notice it. Like I've described it to people that had already ridden it, and they were like, oh, wow, I didn't even notice there was something happening.
Yeah. No, and that might be true. And it's really mostly noticeable when it first boots up. But it's really, and I love the way the whole experience is, where they have these little storage lockers that look like you would if you were inside like the actual science lab, to then transport yourself into the world of Avatar. It's just a brilliant idea and brilliant design. And of course, you have that moment where you think it's like 20 people on the ride, and then if you look left and right, you see it's like 4 rows/stories tall. You know, like basically twice the size of Soarin'. And
it's humongous, yeah.
It's ridiculous. And the scenery is beautiful. I know, so when we go in November, my sister Bethany, she's a huge fan of the movie. She actually loves it, loves the design, loves the world. It's just like right up her alley. So I can't wait to take her. That's like priority number one when she's out there. When we have our October/November wine and dine trip, which I'm pretty hyped about. So that's
Halloween.
So that's kind of the that pretty much covers World of Avatar. It's interesting, because when we were texting back and forth, Aaron, my sort of hot take was covered by what you just sort of outlined as the ride experience, which I loved, maybe not quite as much as you, but I certainly still loved, but that I was just impressed by the ambience of the world of Avatar, frankly, more so than Galaxy's Edge. And I'll tell you why, because you're probably asking why. And then you can prove me wrong. But I think the set piece of and this is really, really specific, but the set piece of the way you walk through the path, and you sort of have the natural drum circle that has the performers there that are there pretty often, and you have each of the there's sort of the central walkway, which you could just hang out there and it's beautiful, but the entrance to the Navi River Ride, to Flight of Passage, Pangu Pangu, and the places to eat, all just sort of are like in their own little tucked away corners. The physical design, and then crowned by literally looking up and seeing the engineering of the floating rocks, how they literally kind of simulated that visual trick to make them look like floating rocks. Just literally having that tower above you has this really immersive feel to the design. And then there's the other advantage I think they have, which is that the world of Avatar is just a more cheerful, foliage-y, to make up a word. It's a more green world. And so like it's a more cheerful aesthetic in some ways than Galaxy's Edge, whereas Galaxy's Edge, because of the market and the bazaar is at the center of it, it's sort of like your central travel point is through the bazaar, and it feels, and it's kind of very much Tatooine in its feel. It's very arid, and the centerpiece is the Millennium Falcon currently. However, the Millennium Falcon is kind of tucked down in a way. So, like, in terms of the physical design and ambience and of the actual two areas, I think World of Avatar actually has an advantage.
Yeah, I could definitely see that take on it. I think the Star Wars stuff, they decided to go with that familiar look and feel of, you know, kind of like a Tatooine type of thing, because that's what people think of when they think of Star Wars a lot of times. And that puts it at a disadvantage because your color palette is a lot more boring, you know, when you do that. And they did, you know, there's things there that are more, there are colorful with the flags and, you know, the kind of like the awnings that are above the marketplace and all of that is a little bit more colorful. But in general, it is a pretty drab looking land.
Yeah.
It doesn't have all the colorful plants or like Avatar at night or like Pandora at night, even more so is, you know, outshines Galaxy's Edge because it's got this kind of neon glow to everything and the sound of like bugs and stuff like that, that they pump through the speakers that really does make you feel kind of like you're in this other world.
Yeah.
So I could give you that. I'd say that ambiance wise, I would say that Pandora kind of outdoes Galaxy's Edge.
Wow. I thought you were going to come back at me.
Well, no, your text, I believe, was...
Our text was more, a lot more theatrical.
Sorry. Like you felt like the detail or something was better, which I would definitely disagree with that.
I think I had some sort of like really theatrical, highly opinionated text that that was really sassy that I couldn't defend on the podcast. I was a lot more nuanced in my presentation of my opinion.
You were trying to push my buttons on the text.
I was. I really was.
You're like, man, I think Avatar is better than Star Wars now. Get out!
It's true. Nerd. Well, and here's the thing. I also, the final place I haven't been in Galaxy's Edge is the Cantina. And so that's the other thing is I had a delicious drink my whole time walking through. And I can't say that.
That helps. That and really you were with help. The love of your life.
And which also helps. There's that. So, yeah. You know.
You can't have a bad time hanging out with Savannah.
Yes. No, exactly. I agree. It's why I'm marrying her. I finally pulled it up because I alluded to it and I should have had it loaded up at the beginning of the show, but the drink, it's the Night Blossom. It's a mixture of, well, no, it's actually the Night Blossom is one version. The one version I had is called the Rum Blossom because of course you want that one. It's Bacardi with layers of apple and dessert pear limeade topped with passion fruit and boba balls with a glowing Undelta seed. Which is kind of cool.
So it was boba balls.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So
sounds delicious. I actually haven't had. I don't believe I've had an alcoholic drink in Pandora.
Well,
I've gone to the canteen, Satuli Canteen, and eaten some of the food there, which I thought was really good. But I haven't had a chance to check out some of the smaller stands.
And I didn't actually go to the Satuli. I was thinking about it, but we just stuck with that. It got that drink, and then we got the snack that's there, which is pretty popular. I liked it okay, but it seemed to be like everyone loved it. Everyone there was buying it. Was the Pangu Lumpia, which is a little pineapple cream cheese spring roll thing, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Again, Disney really taking their...
My wife, being Filipino, would correct your pronunciation there.
What
Lumpia.
Lumpia. I was very Americanized. So I had the Pongu.
I had the Lumpia.
I had the Pongu Lumpia.
The Lumpia.
It's pineapple cream cheese spring roll. Yeehaw.
I'm going to have to tell Victoria after this recording, like, oh, gotcha. You will not believe how Riley pronounced Lumpia.
That is so culturally insensitive to me, too. I apologize to any and all Navi. where was I? Food. It was good. It wasn't amazing, but it's perfect. I just sent you did I send you the link or was I distracted by my mispronunciation? Oh no, there you go. I just sent you the link and we'll have a link in our show notes, with the menu and pictures of the little stand because Pangu Pangu it's kind of tucked away. It's right behind the mech that's standing there. It's that little shack and it's just a small little quick service place. But that's really where some of the best snacks are, as I've learned in my extensive research of the Disney food blog, as I'm becoming a Disney foodie.
Yes.
Which,
you know, you and I have been to World of Avatar together.
Oh yeah, I've walked through it several times, which is always
okay.
It's been beautiful when I've gone through. I guess I feel like this is the first time really experiencing. I've run through it a few times.
We have run through it. And I think we literally just did that was that day we were trying to take in as much of Animal Kingdom as we could in like a very short amount of time.
Yes. Ah, yes. The perfect itinerary day. So, peak Disney.
Yeah. So yeah, we hit all the fast passes just on time, and we did the Lion King show, and I think we did Everest. But yeah, we definitely weren't going to waste any time waiting in line for anything at World of Avatar. But we did a walkthrough. We got some pictures in front of the waterfalls.
So. Yeah, no, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Which, and we did hang up in the Animal Kingdom a while. That was mostly what I wanted to talk about. We saw like the Lion King show. It was really cool, and I kind of toured around at Everest. But we did Galaxy's Edge. I probably don't have as many long-winded opinions about the other two, because Galaxy's Edge, it's exactly the same, like basically.
Right.
I even like got all excited because I saw this really cool like speeder bay, and I didn't notice it like the three times I've been to the one in California, but evidently it's there. You corrected me, and that speeder bay is also in Anaheim, so it's basically the same.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things that people have pointed out in like the marketplace. There's a little seating area that's a little bit different. And then I think the big tank in the entrance in Anaheim, the tank is like tan, but in Florida, there's this big tank that's like blue. And so there are a couple things that are different.
Yeah.
That kind of stand out. So you know which one you're at, you know, if you see pictures of people. But yeah, I think that was their intention. They wanted to make it as identical as they possibly could, so you feel like you're on the same planet.
Oh, for sure. And I did get one of the, where Savannah saw it, and since I hadn't gotten it yet, I got one of the thermal detonator Coca-Colas, which as she was purchasing, I got to like kind of yell out to nobody because nobody's listening, but it made me happy. I was like, she's holding a thermal detonator. And then somewhere I was like, Aaron will think this is funny, so... so there was that, but that was really, we kind of walked through it. It was Savannah's first time seeing it at night, and that is true. A lot of these places really do come to life at night in a beautiful way, so that was cool. And then we have time, because we didn't realize the galaxy fireworks, what do they call them?
Galactic Spectacular.
That's the one. It was Galaxy something. Galactic Spectacular. They aren't till 10 p.m. So nice. I thought it was at 9 for some reason. So we had a little extra time. I was like, well, there's literally, we looked on the app. Wow. It was kind of not dead, but the crowds were light again. We keep looking out because of course this time, perfect time of year for Disney World because school's just back in session. It's the weekend after Labor Day weekend. So, the hurricane just rolled through.
Hurricane season. Yeah. This is the time of year. If you can get to Disney, this is the time of year to go,
yeah,
because it's light crowds for
so,
sure.
So Slinky Dog Dash was 30 minutes. So we went over to Toy Story Land and got to kind of experience that. Again, following that trend of trying to be more immersive where the cast members greet you as toys and, you know, you're kind of becoming a toy at scale within the land. One of the funniest examples of that, I think, is the Elmer's glue. The giant Elmer's glue in a bottle that's in the Slinky Dog Dash line, but it was pretty great. Slinky Dog Dash also is a really cool roller coaster. I'd never seen one like this, but in the way it accelerates several times mid-ride, it's pretty cool.
That's a good ride. I've only ever ridden it once. I was there last fall and rode it with some friends, and we didn't have a fast pass. We decided to get in line and wait another time. I think that was probably a 2-hour wait. And we got to fully experience the queue because of that. Yeah. But I was really impressed with that ride a lot.
Yeah, and no, for sure.
I think we were talking on it last episode, but it shoots you off, right?
Yes, no, yeah, it's like that right out of the gate, which I guess is a little, you know, the one thing that's kind of like it is the initial launch of the Incredicoaster. But that's it has that kind of acceleration a few times, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool. Hey, Aaron, you were talking about Epcot and how as an old fart you're looking at some of the changes, and there's a little bit of a nostalgia tear coming to your eye as Epcot is like the Phoenix.
We knew
down.
All these changes were coming because of D23, and we talked about most of it in the last episode. We talked about a lot of the changes that were coming. But then today, or not today, but like in the past couple of days, I've been seeing people posting pictures of the construction. Like they've actually already started to wall stuff off, and the fountain has been drained, and they're walled that off, and Club Cool, and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, like it's already happening. Like I thought I was at least, because I knew we were going there, you know, end of October, beginning of November. I was like, oh, I thought I'd be able to at least have a chance to see these things one more time, you know, or go say goodbye to some certain parts, you know, but they're already well underway with this construction, which, yeah, it did kind of make me feel like, oh, like these are things that I've always kind of known and associated to that park, and I'm excited for the change. But at the same time, there is a part of me that's always going to be sad when things, you know, things like that go away. Even something as dumb as the fountain, you know, it's like kind of like, oh, I walk by that fountain all the time, you know? I have a picture in front of it from the last time that we did the half marathon, you know?
Yeah.
Me and Vic standing in front of that fountain with the Epcot ball in the background, and that's going to be gone. So it is kind of a sad, bittersweet, I guess.
Yes. No, bittersweet indeed. An example, Club Cool, one of the many attractions closing down in the wake of all of this construction at Epcot. And I pulled up this article. It's from The Motley Fool. Kind of talking about the financial end of it, but it's a really good... It's also on Yahoo Finance. We'll link to it in the notes. But it's an interesting way of looking at this. The title is Disney World Has to Break Epcot Before It Can Fix It, which is a pretty harsh title. But they use Club Cool as an example because it is slated to open again in some kind of capacity. But for a lot of the other exhibits that are closing down right now in the wake of this construction, the same can't be said for them. Like the locations, character greeting areas. Basically, the Disney Imagineers are doing a real overhaul, and we covered a lot of the detail of the new attractions in order to do this. But here's and I had never seen this phrase until this week. I saw it pop up a couple times on social media, and I think I texted you, Aaron, about like, are you seeing some of the maybe not controversy or some of the gnashing of teeth with Epcot? Because the phrase I kept seeing is IPCOT. In reference to a lot of the new attractions, because just a little quick rundown here, we have, let's see, Space 2020, that's basically a space station themed one, which isn't, I guess, as directly IP based, but I mean, go down the list, the Ratatouille themed dark ride in France, the first roller coaster for the park, it's the Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind that we talked about. A lot of these, the Mary Poppins, the whole area of Mary Poppins, popping up, the, Moana themed. So like a huge amount of IP is coming to the park. And the idea of this new Epcot is, I mean, it's kind of similar to Hollywood Studios, as Hollywood Studios has begun to slowly, maybe not abandon the classic Hollywood trope, but as they add Toy Story Land, Galaxy's Edge, as the streets of America kind of gave way now to Galaxy's Edge, the we are seeing that sort of IP themed ride. And here's what's interesting to me. I get Epcot's sort of original vision, and I actually think it's a completely fair argument to say that a lot of these new IP, Ratatouille or Mary Poppins, those aren't exactly future world themed, the future of humanity, so to speak, which is kind of the original vision for Epcot. So I'll grant you that. But what I find the ultimate irony, Aaron, is that the people who are so frustrated by the upcoming future changes of Epcot to incorporate a lot of the Disney IP, the future of the park, as Disney desperately attempts to bring Epcot into the modern world and to make attractions more friendly to some of their franchises, the old school originalist Disney fans are complaining about the very thing that Epcot was founded on, which was looking to the future and embracing change and progress. And I find that kind of funny, I'm not going to lie.
You can spin it that way, sure.
am I poking the bear? Is this a little too close to home?
Oh, no. I mean, I like progress. And I think more often than not, even when I get a little annoyed by a change or, you know, kind of wish something wasn't going away, it doesn't take me very long to embrace the new.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been my experience with this stuff. And they're not getting rid of anything that I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just some aesthetic of the park. But I think what the end result is going to be a positive for the park. It's going to bring excitement to the park again. So I'm completely on board with it. Even if there is a little bit of a tear about some of the changes, I think ultimately it'll be a good thing.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. And I don't have that same kind of nostalgia for this park, but man, I mean, I do for Hollywood Studios. We talked about it on the show. And as I kind of, even walking back and seeing how much the Streets of America changed just to make way for Galaxy's Edge, there's a little part of me that's like, oh, I remember when I used to hang out there with my friends. You know, it's just like just little things like that. But even for something as amazing as Galaxy's Edge, which, of course, as a big Star Wars fan, I was really excited about. So I find it is kind of interesting how I think with any of this stuff, the focus should not be on as much as we can cherish our memories of these parks that we love, every little detail of. I always prefer to look forward a little bit and focus on the new memories you can always make. Not to be super cheesy, but that was so bad it should be like our closing line.
They've been sprinkling in this stuff, you know, the IP. You know, the most popular ride at Epcot right now by far is the Frozen ride.
Yeah.
You know,
no, and that's true.
That's a big Disney IP. And there's Nemo stuff that's been in the park now for a while at the aquarium and stuff. So I think that they've been sprinkling it in a little bit, and then we're going to get a few more things with Ratatouille and Mary Poppins. But it's not like a complete, you know, every single area of, you know, the World Showcase is getting a Disney ride. You know, they're not putting an Aladdin ride in there, or they're not doing anything like that yet. So yeah,
no, that's true.
We'll see.
That's true. Well, hey, that's going to put the wraps on this episode. Episode 26 of Mouse and Castle, the Mouse and Castle podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys. As always, really appreciate your support and listening to the show. Hey, make sure if you have not, you've subscribed to the Mouse and Castle podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, go ahead and subscribe. Super easy, especially right there. If you're listening to us on the Apple Podcasts app, you can just go right there and you'll see the ability to leave us a rating and review. And that is the best way to share the show with your friends. Helps us with the rankings, helps people know we're listening, helps people discover the show. And hey, as always, pass the podcast along. Share it with your Disney friends, the Mouse and Castle podcast. We'll have links to everything we've talked about on the website. That is mouseandcastlepodcast.com. An awesome site that you can go back and hear all of our episodes. So make sure you do that. Again, all the links are right there. We make it easy for you to find. Hey, email us mouseandcastle@gmail.com. And of course, you can follow us on Instagram, where you can see all kinds of cool pictures of all the trips I just talked about on our Instagram. It's at mouseandcastle. Aaron, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at AVGoins. I'm also on Instagram under the same.
Sweet. And we'll have the link right there. You can find me at The Riley Guy, at The Riley Guy, R-I-L-E-Y, on Twitter, Instagram. That's my favorite spot to hang out. And Snapchat, if that's your kind of thing. But Instagram really is the best place to find it. I'm usually posting, especially with the recent Disney trips, you can post that stuff there. Or CUI engagement pictures, because that's kind of the bigger deal. Like, we talked about Disney for the whole hour. Let's be honest. The real big deal was me getting engaged. I'm pretty hyped. And I'm pretty hyped to go back to Disney with a fiance is pretty great. I'm not going to lie. I'm a big fan.
Might be good. It might be great for you. I don't know how much we're going to want to be around you.
Oh, no. We're not going to be that bad.
The lovey-dovey.
Oh, gosh.
Jeez. Oh, there they go again.